My name is Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX.
Hello and happy February, everybody, and welcome to the Volunteer Spotlight, brought to you by Aftersight. I'm your host, Evan Starnes, and I hope everybody's had themselves an excellent start to their month, and I hope that you guys have a good Valentine's Day, as that is coming up pretty quick here. On the topic of Valentine's Day, we, Aftersight, are doing a special little thing called podcast shoutouts. So if you have a special message for a special someone, or maybe just a congratulatory message, or something that you want one of our guests to read on air, you can go to aftersight.org/shoutout, and you can leave a shout out for somebody. And because it's Valentine's Day, we are offering a discount. We're offering a 50% discount if you use the code LOVE with all caps. And yeah, that'll give you $10 off for your shout out. Also, if you have any feedback about our podcasts or for any of our hosts, you can always email feedback@aftersight.org, or if you have any specific questions for our podcast hosts, you can call 720-712-8856. Joining me this month is a longtime volunteer and a pretty special one. He has been a producer and a reader of the Hobby Radio program and the Opera News program. So yeah, joining me today is Keith, otherwise known as W0NX. Hopefully it's okay that I say that.
No, of course.
Absolutely. So yeah, how are you doing today, Keith?
Oh, good, Evan. Thank you very much for having me, and this is quite an honor.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you here, and yeah, congratulations again. I'm so sorry we got the news out to you this late today, but...
That's fine. Yeah, well, it's no accounting for issues with my Comcast email.
Yeah, Comcast email can be kind of funky.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. Well, I always like to ask volunteers a couple of little fun questions to get the creative juices flowing. So, Keith, tell me, what is your favorite outdoor activity to do around this time? And it's okay if you don't have one, because...
My girlfriend and I like to take walks on the walking trails around my house in Arvada and also her house in Littleton. So that's pretty much it. We try not to get too crazy.
So yeah, fair.
We don't do anything like skiing or snowmobiling or anything like that.
Absolutely.
No, just little neighborhood walks.
Absolutely. What's your favorite thing to do while you're walking on those trails? Like, do you like... Are you more of like a scenery person, or are you more just about the exercise, or both?
Oh, we just like to stroll and see what birds are out and listen to them, and yeah, just enjoy the outdoors.
It's a lot of fun, absolutely.
Yeah.
Lastly, what is your favorite thing to listen, or what is your favorite form of audio content to listen to? You could either be, I could either be podcasts, audiobooks, or something else.
I see. Well, lately I've really gotten into a podcast called Aria Code, which is put out by WQXR and WNYC in New York City. And it's all about famous operas and their arias. They're specific showstoppers, so to speak, during the operas. And the hostess, Rhiannon Giddens, usually has some interesting guests discussing the aria and how it came about and what to listen for, and usually concludes with a performance of the aria. So I've been listening to that recently, been really enjoying it.
That's incredibly cool. Yeah, it seems like opera is definitely your thing. I mean, you've got a program dedicated to it and all that, so...
Yeah, it's been a personal interest of mine for... about 20-some years.
Absolutely.
So I try to go to a lot of performances that are local, like Opera Colorado, Central City Opera, the opera program at CU Boulder.
Right.
And I've been to other cities, too. Been to the Met in New York, Chicago, San Francisco. Yeah, I try to get around.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. You sure do. Yeah, well, let's dive right in here. So how did you first discover AfterSight, and what made you want to fill out an application to volunteer?
Well, this is probably ancient history. I was looking for volunteer opportunities in the late 90s. And at the time, I was living in Boulder and was getting the Daily Camera. And I think it was in the Daily Camera that in 1999, roughly, there was an article about a cooking contest that involved the spam-spiced ham canned meat product as the featured ingredient. And what was funny is there was this organization called Radio Reading Service of the Rockies that was associated with this cooking contest. And I thought this was the funniest thing, was a cooking contest around spam.
Yeah.
And I thought, I wonder if they are looking for volunteers.
Right, you think.
Yeah, because this is this sounds like my kind of organization. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm a big eater of spam. I just thought it was kind of a funny idea for a cooking contest. So I followed up on that and came into the, at the time, Radio Reading Service of the Rockies, RRSR Studios, and met everybody, met... let's see, at the time it was Pam, Kat, Mrs. H, Cherry David. Price, David, and Paul Migliorelli. Mm-hmm. And they set me up with an audition to try out, and I apparently passed.
You did.
even with my mangling of some words and names. But in any case, they accepted me, and... I got started coming into the studios reading the Greeley Tribune.
Aha.
So I did that for quite a while. So everything was recorded. Nothing was live. I didn't have any live shows, actually, ever. And did that for several years. And then there was somebody who was already reading opera news, which is a publication of the Metropolitan Opera Guild.
Ah, okay.
And they were no longer going to be available to do that, so they offered it to me. And at the time, I was getting into opera, so it was a perfect opportunity to read something that was a personal interest of mine.
Absolutely. It sounded like you were perfect, absolutely perfect fit for that show.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. And... then over time, Paul and I, who is also an amateur radio operator, thought that it'd be interesting to have a program about amateur radio and shortwave listening. And at the time, the publication that looked like the best one was going to be Monitoring Times, kind of a... enthusiast publication for shortwave listening and
hams, and
I started that, and it's what I've been sticking with over the years. So, not so much in a nutshell, I guess. That's how I got started.
No, that's exactly perfect.
RRSR.
That actually answered some other questions that I had had too. I had honestly thought hobby or opera news was like a program that you curated yourself. I didn't know that was from. The
Metropolitan Opera Company's guild.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that first. So, when did you start getting into opera, and then and what kind of sparked that?
Well, if we go again way back when, I went to a high school that had a music appreciation course was mandatory, and they got me introduced to classical music. So ever since I was a teenager, I've enjoyed listening to classical music. And there'd often be opera selections from different famous were included as part of the programming. And there was one program I used to listen to all the time by George Jelinek, and that was called The Vocal Scene, I think, and that was all about opera. So this was way back in the 70s, and I always enjoyed listening to that. But it was always kind of a peripheral interest. It wasn't something that I really sought out for many years.
Right.
But I had an uncle who was a real enthusiast for opera. And when I visited him one time, he pulled out a VCR tape of a famous opera called Carmen that is very popular. And he wanted to introduce me to it. And he said, oh, well, why don't we watch this opera and see what you think?
Yeah.
And it was something that just grabbed my interest immediately. Yeah, seeing the whole production from start to finish. And it was sung in French, the original language in which it was composed. But it had subtitles. And this is something that I think was fairly new for the time, having subtitles in opera houses and also in recordings of operas. Mm-hmm. And it just transformed the experience because up to that time, you had to study the libretto and figure out what they were singing if you didn't know the language in which they were singing. So it was kind of a project to attend or listen to operas up to that time. But it just grabbed my attention. And I thought this is something that I could really enjoy getting into more deeply.
Absolutely.
So I guess I was in my 20s at that time. And thereafter, I began to seek it out. When I got back home and began to go to local productions and got familiar with the different companies that I could attend in person around here and then in other cities. Sometimes I'd go on business trips and
get to hear maybe one as a bonus or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. If I had some free time, I'd see what was going on in the area. And
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, what was like, if you could tell me, what was the most notable opera you ever attended?
I have to say that seeing the complete Ring cycle by Richard Wagner.
Whoa.
Now, this was not necessarily in person, but it was a theater simulcast of a live production at the Metropolitan Opera in New York that they still do now. They simulcast select productions during the season in movie theaters around the world. And at the time, I was seeing these whenever they were available. And one of them was the full four-part series of The Ring Cycle. And it was a new production. It was a very exciting production. But all told, that's roughly 16 hours see the whole Ring cycle, and I kind of consider that a significant achievement, finally seeing the complete Ring cycle.
Absolutely. That's actually a really good performance, and I think that's one of those performances, and I'm sure there's plenty more out there, but it's one of those where you can just listen to the music to kind of easily be able to discern what's going on scenic-wise. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a magic fire at one point that had a very that was the one that stuck out to me most, is it had a very distinctive melody behind it, and you could tell it was a fire, and you could even hear the roaring of the fire and like of the flames kind of beginning through the orchestra, and it was definitely an experience.
Yeah, isn't that incredible?
It is incredible.
How a composer can produce music that has such a clear response.
There's a term
audience.
For it. Yes. And I'm sure plenty of people are like screaming it in the audience or whatever, but there's an astonishing amount of things that you can do with just audio alone, which is actually a great segue into our next topic here. You're definitely obviously an amateur radio operator. How long have you been an amateur radio operator, and what got you into amateur radio in the first place?
Well, again, this goes into the deep past.
It's fine. We got to do it.
Again, at this high school that I went to in St. Louis, where I grew up, they had a radio club, and they actually had a physical radio shack.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, it was so cool. The school was on the grounds of a former farm in St. Louis County. Mm-hmm. And I think that this shack used to be a little storage building, or maybe it's where the chickens lived.
Oh, gotcha.
Something like that. But it was a funny little shack. And they, over time, I guess... maybe some administrators and students, maybe in the 60s, decided to turn it into a real Radio Shack with some really cool vintage gear in it. And they had a little radio tower, a push-up extendable radio tower with a tri-band, or for those who aren't familiar, an antenna on the top, which you could rotate and point where you wanted your signal to go.
Wow.
And they had an active small group of students who were participating in the radio club. And this just looked thrilling to me. And I got into the radio club, got involved, and they had an advisor, kind of a faculty advisor, but he wasn't on the faculty. But he was a man who worked for a TV station in St. Louis who was a ham, and he every week called the radio club to order in our little shack, and we would have little projects that we would work on. Like little things that he would show us how to construct. And we'd play with Morse code, play with the radios. And I just really got into that. And I got radio fever,
yeah,
so to speak.
That's a good term.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, exactly. And this was 1976, 1977.
Okay.
And... at that time, you could get the entry-level license by taking a little test and also demonstrating your proficiency in receiving and sending Morse code with this advisor who was an elder ham who came in and supervised us. So he administered the test after I'd done some studying and did our little theory test and our little Morse code test, and I passed, and I became a WB0YPO.
Oh, wow.
/ N for novice. At the time, you only had this introductory license for a short amount of time, and they encouraged you to upgrade and get a more more sophisticated license that required more studying of theory and Morse. And so I did that after a few months, studied and increased my ability with Morse code, and passed the next level test. At the time, you had to go to the FCC field office in downtown St. Louis. And you had to, this only happened a few times a year, that you could take a test. So there was a written test, and you had to do things like draw diagrams of an amplifier circuit? Or what would you do for this kind of modulation? And you had to make the schematics by hand.
Oh my gosh.
And then there was also a receiving and sending test for Morse code at a much higher speed than for the original license that I took. But I did all that and passed and got the next level up and then operated at that license class for many years in St. Louis and also here.
Absolutely.
And then later on, I finally upgraded to the highest license class. And at that license class, I was able to apply for this shortened call sign that I currently have, W0NX.
Yeah, I'd wondered about that because I'd noticed most people's call signs are usually 5 characters, sometimes more. But yeah, yours had been particularly short, which struck my attention.
Yeah, it's known as a 1x2, and you can get those when you're an extra. And I was watching what call signs were becoming available with the FCC over time and saw that one had come up. It used to be, I think, the Eastern Iowa DX Association, but they released it.
Yeah, gotcha.
At some point, and then I jumped on it. It's a lot faster in Morse code than my original call. And
I'm
sure. I operate with Morse code much of the time, and my original call was super long.
Oh, yeah.
So the new 1x2 worked out a lot better.
Okay. That's really cool. And I didn't even think about Morse code because it seems nowadays that they don't really prioritize. They might mention Morse code, but at least when I was looking at the practice ones, they didn't really seem to they didn't require it anymore, that you had to be knowledgeable in it.
Yes, exactly.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
Now, and I'm sure for those listening, yes, we will change topics here in a couple minutes. But I do want to answer a question that some folks might have that are interested in getting into amateur radio. There are several levels of being not an operator, but you have your technician, I think, and then operator, and then something else. There's different several levels of license you can get. I think the entry level is technician, pretty sure.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they've changed the levels over the years, but yeah, basically it starts out there and then you can move up 2 or 3 more until you get to the top level.
Okay, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, on the other topic of audio, so you've been a remote reader for some time now. How long exactly?
Well, let's see. I moved from Boulder to Arvada in 2007. And it was at that time that I became a remote reader.
Wow, very cool. So can you describe your recording setup?
Yeah, sure thing. I found recording software which is called Total Recorder by an outfit. I don't know if they're still around, but the outfit was called High Criteria, and I think they're based in Canada. But I found that recording software, and it had a lot of features, and automatic gain control. You can put in filters for pops and funny little noises that you might get from playing a record, an old record, and you're trying to clean up the audio, and some other features. But in any case, I've been using that for many years, and would probably be worth my while to explore Audacity. But I have a lot of experience with this particular software, and it's been working okay for me so far.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I run that on a laptop. The laptop's then connected to a little mixer box.
Behringer, probably.
Yeah,
that's Behringer. What we used to use all the time here in the studios is little Behringer mixers.
Yeah, that's what I have, and it's been holding up all these years. And then that goes to a Shure Dynamic cardioid mic.
Aha.
So that's been working out for me. Lately, I've been trying to track down noise sources and eliminate them, but I think nowadays I've gotten most of those annoying background things fixed. So anyways, this system seems to be working. It's kind of patched together, but it's been working over the years for me.
It definitely sounds like it, and that would explain the very very good dynamic range that you have, because those Shure mics, they're the best of the best, at least in my opinion. They're not like, you know, they've got thousands of dollars mics out there, but I think those are like the top of the line, so that's awesome. Now, is there a particular word of advice or some inspiration or just something really important that you learned over the years volunteering that you'd like to potentially share with people interested in volunteering or existing volunteers?
Well, I would encourage anybody who has the least interest in getting involved with AfterSight to go for it. I mean, this is such a wonderful organization. And I would encourage people to volunteer in any way that they can.
Absolutely.
If you do become a reader, I would encourage people to find a way to try to read naturally.
I'm very glad you said that, because that is often something that can be a little tough to explain to people too, is how you, when you sit down in front of the microphone and click record, how you actually present the program, because it's supposed to be in a neutral tone with no bias. But yeah, people get nervous, and then that will affect your tone, and then eventually you might start. It sounds like you're reading off of a PowerPoint presentation to somebody or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. That's a good point about the opportunity there is that biases can creep into what you're reading.
That is good, solid advice. So thank you so much. Now, lastly, before we wrap this up, do you have any questions for me, Evan Starnes, or the entirety of AfterSight?
Not particularly.
Okay.
No, I've enjoyed seeing how this organization has evolved and survived over the years, and how your programming has changed.
Absolutely.
And you've added new programs, different types of programs, and yeah, it's really nice to see.
Absolutely.
How the organization has developed over the years.
Well, Keith, I'd like to thank you so much and congratulate you once again. I know it sounds like we sound like broken records here on being nominated as the Volunteer of the Month for February. But yes, I'd like to thank you for joining me for this episode of the Volunteer Spotlight. And I hope everybody is having a good February. Please, if you have any comments or questions, don't hesitate to reach out, feedback@aftersight.org, or of course, send in your shout outs. We're really looking forward to these shout outs. We launched that kind of last month, and it's been exciting seeing what's happened. So anyway, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Volunteer Spotlight. I've been your host, Evan Starnes, and I will see you guys next month.